When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
Okay, I'm ready to start now.
Okay.
All right.
Two.
Well, you know, here's what I've been thinking about lately. Yeah. I'm happy.
Huh. I noticed that when you came in, you had a little kick in your giggle.
What?
A kick in your giggle, you know.
I don't understand.
A jiggle in your giggle. You were bouncy, happy.
What's a kick in your giggle?
Well, it's like you had fun pants on. Happy pants.
What are you talking about?
When people are happy, there's a little scoot in their step.
Well, first of all, if you're giggling, the implication is you're already happy. So why do you need a kick in your giggle?
Like a little...
It's just a redundant kind of a thing there.
Please, please carry on before you become mad.
Well, yeah. I mean, because that saying doesn't even make sense. It's just sort of like a waste of words.
All I was saying...
And, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous to begin with, but the fact is, like, if you have a giggle, you don't need a kick in it because you're already giggling.
All I said was when you came in the studio.
You know what I'm saying, though? You see that it's sort of, like, redundant. You do see, Jake, you see that, right?
Hey, Jillian, what's going on in your mind? What was the line again?
Well, happy. I was happy.
And I said I noticed it.
Mm-hmm. Although you are quickly making that go away.
Yeah.
But with that said, yeah. And then here's the problem with being happy. Want to know the problem?
Oh, because it's stupid.
I bet you know the problem. I bet everybody knows the problem with being happy if you stop and think about it. Guess. We could be here all day. But it's okay.
Well, when you're happy, you're afraid that the bottom's going to fall.
Yes! Out. Oh, my God. Look, Janice, see, you are still smart. You've gotten older, but your brain is still working. Yes, you're exactly right. Now I wait every day for something bad to happen. I'm like, oh, God, what's coming?
Yeah.
What's coming? Oh, God, what's coming? And it's like a lot of things. It took me a lot of time to get a lot of things in order with my family life, with my professional life, and like I'm looking at my world right now. I'm like, both my kids are home. I have, you know, some pretty good options to choose from my career path. When I do choose to go back to television, it's like I could go this way, I could go that way, I could go this way. I feel confident about a lot of them.
And I'm just like, I'm in this place where I'm content. And I'm kind of, the motherhood thing is sort of, I'm settling into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And although I am as far from perfect as it gets, I still feel like, you know, we're all functioning. Everybody's functioning here. We're all making it through the day with a kick in our giggle for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my son's happy. My daughter's pretty happy other than bedtime. Heidi's like doing well. She's through all that post-pregnancy, because that stuff's brutal, by the way. That post-pregnancy kind of,
okay,
oof, poor thing. And, you know, we're kind of like, okay, we've got a little rhythm. We've got a little routine and life is good. And now I just sit there and I wait for the sky to fall.
Not funny. Isn't that funny?
And it sucks because, and I'm like, Heidi goes, you know what, babe? What the hell is wrong with you? You spend so much time kind of stressing about everything not being perfect and the ducks not being in a row. And, you know, how are you going to bridge this gap? And how are you going to get from A to B? And how are we going to get the kids home? How are we going to learn how to handle the kids? How, you know, what choice are you going to make in your career? What if this option doesn't become available to you? Blah, 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 blah. She's like, now everything is kind of settled in. And now you're like, you are at the ready anticipating disaster and you can't even enjoy when things are good. So what's the point of them being good? And I just, what is that? Why do we do that? Because it's true. It's like we spend so much energy trying to make things good, trying to be happy, trying to get things where we want them to be. And then when they're there, we don't live in that space.
I think because we don't trust the feeling, because it's so fleeting now to be truly in happiness.
Yeah.
That it's odd for us to feel that.
And I worry that maybe you think if you get attached to being happy and then things fall apart, you're going to be devastated. Almost like with a relationship. If you get too attached to an individual and they leave you, you're going to be devastated. So you use defense mechanisms to always think in your head you're holding them at bay when really, of course, you're not. And your defense mechanisms end up sabotaging the relationship. And then you're having to deal with the loss of the relationship that you were defending against feeling in the first place.
And you're the perpetrator of.
Yeah. Right? You end up creating the thing you fear the most. Yeah. Your thoughts create your behavior, which affects your actions, your reality. And there you go. You create it. And so I'm really working on right now just stopping the drama and thinking like, oh, my God. What if I am so bananas that I actually think to myself, I must be getting sick soon. Something's going to happen and I'm going to get sick. That's how I think. Cause I'm like, well, the kids are here and everything's good there. But professionally I have a handle on things and that's exciting. So, you know, what's going to happen. I'm going to get sick and all this is going to fall to crap. And my shrink, I was talking to my shrink about it. And I was like, whenever it's the calm before the storm, whenever things are calm and good and quiet, the worst has yet to come. And he's like, that is absurd. You cannot say this. That's the most ridiculous thing. He's like, you're not God. You can't predict, the future in this way. And I was like, yes, I am. These things happen. And the reality is it doesn't matter. I decided it's irrelevant whether I do get sick or I don't get sick or whether something tragic happens or it doesn't happen. It's not going to do me any good thinking about it right now. And if I can just in this moment ask myself these questions, like right now, am I healthy and happy? Yes. Is my family healthy and happy? Yes. Is there a roof over my head? Yes. Are we financially able to eat and take care of ourselves? Yes, we are. Then leave it at that and just sit in that feeling and try to kind of get used to it. And the truth is, yeah, because something will eventually happen. It always does. I don't know when, but that's just part of life. And my mom was talking to me once. I guess she had read, there was a movie called The Hours, and I guess she'd read the book. And I guess the point of the book was just kind of like happiness is these fleeting moments, right? That it's not a constant state, which I had a really hard time with when I was younger. But I realized there's truth to that. And without the hardships of life, there's no wisdom, there's no growth, there's no depth. So you have to have your fair share of hard knocks. With that said, though, these moments, these glimpses, these sort of beautiful flashes of brilliance in your life, if you can't really be there for them, then there is no point. And I guess I would just say to all of you who live in this place of fearing an attachment to goodness in your life, in your relationships. It's a waste of your energy. You won't die if it falls apart, because it could and it might. You won't die if that person leaves you, but if you act like they're going to, then they probably will. Try to just allow yourself to sit in it. And I wonder if it's also, I wonder if it's a self-worth thing, if you feel like you don't deserve it, or if it's a fear from things that have gone wrong in the past.
Don't you think it's also a muscle you have to work, though?
Like, yeah.
Like, I think of happiness in that state. You have to feel it to know it, and to go back to it, you have to remember what it feels like. So it's like a muscle you got to, just like working out a bicep, you got to work that muscle to, I don't know how to explain
it. No, you're
it,
right. But... And you look for little moments of happiness in your day, even if things are bad. Like, even when I'm having a terrible, terrible day, I'll think to myself, oh my God, True Blood's on tonight. I'm so excited. So, like, I'll find something to be excited about within my day. Or it could even be, okay, today's crappy and this week is crappy, but you know what? This weekend I'm going to see that movie I've been dying to see for 5 months and it comes out. Yay. I'm going to buy tickets now and have something to look forward to in a few days. Or, whatever it might be, I'll find even moments in a crappy day or a crappy week that have brightness. And I think you can cultivate happiness in that way.
Right. True.
But then it's like, once you have it, you're right. Then you need to really learn how, you're right, to have that familiarity with it and to feel deserving of it. And I think there's a certain amount, you have to work for the happiness, but I do think that we should feel a little bit entitled to it, because we feel so undeserving. It's almost like you don't just deserve for things. You don't deserve a healthy body. You have to work for a healthy body.
Right.
You do deserve it, though, if you've done the work. You don't just get handed a ton of money in your life, usually not, unless you're like Paris Hilton. You usually have to work for it, but we all deserve happiness. We have to work for it to achieve it. But I think we deserve these good things, and it's okay to feel like, you know what? Bad things are going to happen, and I deserve for the good things to happen too. And it might take a little bit of work, but it's worth it in the long run. So anyway, that's my thought. Try to feel deserving. You're right. Try to cultivate those happy moments and build a familiarity with them and really live in the present and ask yourself a series of questions like, what is everything good here? Is everything good there? Am I okay here? You know, and what good is it going to do me to worry about something that has yet to pass? Because
right.
By the way, most of the time, it never happens. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
All those things you worry about never come to pass.
You know what brings great joy to me in this conversation? Is that how you... Or someone who has worked very hard, and you do have, you got a bit of cash in your wallet.
A little bit.
You got a little bit of cash. And so what makes you happy is not to go out and buy something big. You're happy by going home and watching True Blood. Like that's.
Oh, well, wait, though. Let me clarify. That's because I went through the buy something big phase.
And, oh, you did?
And, yeah, I did.
When you first got money.
Yeah.
When you first started earning
money,
I should say.
Yeah. Yeah. I went through that phase, and then I realized I was still unhappy, which
right.
is really convenient to say. Here's what I'll tell you. Money does buy you comfort in that you
Certainly.
Don't have to sit there and go, oh, my God, how are we going to eat? Oh, my God, how am I going to fix my car that's broken? Oh, my God, my dog is sick and I can't afford the vet. There is such a peace in that. I'm not going to lie. There is. And you'd be money can't buy you happiness. Okay. It buys you a real sense of security, and that can afford you some real peace.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the truth. However, you don't need a $10,000 handbag. You don't need a $300,000 car or a $100,000 car, for that matter. You don't need those things. And I've experienced that reality and realized that I was just as happy with my Bronco as I was with the Mercedes G-Wagon that cost $100,000+.
Right.
You know, so now I drive the Bronco and Heidi drives the G-Wagon. But, you know, unless we're with the kids, because she doesn't want me to put the kids in the Bronco because it's a 69 Bronco. I'm not allowed to put the, because they can't
You
be.
Got a 69 Bronco?
I do.
Oh,
it's a
very
piece of
cool.
crap, but I
no,
love it.
No, but that's really cool.
Yeah, but I'm not allowed to put the kids in it. So then why am I talking still?
I went
through that. You have to kind of live through that phase to realize that it's pointless.
But my point is that you do... And that's the beauty, is when you can find joy and happiness in just really simple, simple, lovely things.
I'll tell you, and this will be my last thought, my last word of wisdom for you, Here's the thing that I realized has the most value, despite the fact that I'm not like, you know, a wealthy person, like a Warren Buffett, an Oprah, a Bill Gates kind of a person, but I'm a comfortable person. So, you know, yeah, I don't have yachts and jets and all of that, but I realize that the things that have the most value are not things. They're people in your life that you can count on. Mm. So whether it's, you know, my assistant, Brittany, who, oh my God, I wake up every morning, Brittany and Cody, and I think to myself, how would I get through the day? I lean on them. It's incredible. And I value them mm-hmm. and respect them and think of them as friends as well, but, or my business partner. You know, I couldn't run my business. We have a great relationship. He runs the business and I do the creative stuff. I create the programs, the diets, the workouts, and it allows me to be me. And it's those relationships where you can just sit back and go, oh, you know what? G can handle that. G will do that. Or Brittany can handle that. Or, you know what? Heidi can handle that. Those things, if you can cultivate those friendships and those relationships in your life, that stupid cliche, you'll be wealthy beyond measure. That's so true. Mm. Anyway.
That was lovely.
It wasn't really. It was long-winded. But anyway, let me guess. What a snappy fitness segment. It's like snappy. Not a fitness segment that's droll or tired or boring or slow.
No, I wouldn't.
Give me a snappy one with a kick and the giggle.
With a kick and your giggle. Okay.
Oh, God.
We'll be right back.
Ugh. Ready?
Yep.
Okay. I thought I would explain some exercise lingo to you.
Hmm? Oh, cool. I like that.
Yeah. Would you really?
Yeah.
Oh. All right. So, for people who get confused by some of these common terms that you may read in your Shape or Self magazine, I thought I'd clarify for you. Anaerobic exercise. Do you know what this is? Really? You don't? You're supposed to. Well, it's a high-intensity activity, like lifting heavy weights or sprinting. And what it does is it uses phosphates and glycogen for fuel instead of oxygen. So it's the opposite of aerobic. Anaerobic. And it torches calories. It's great for calorie torching.
What would be some other examples of it then?
God, bursts of high-intensity training.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually going to bring me to something called HIIT. High-intensity interval training. So it would be something like something that's explosive, something that's short. If you're running sprints on the treadmill or if you're doing like explosive intervals on the row machine, anything that's high, high intensity where you jack your heart rate way up. Yeah, it's a heart rate thing.
Okay.
So if you're getting your heart rate like 85% and up, you really cranked out that heart rate.
Okay.
Tabata training is an example. 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off. Although I don't love Tabata training for people that aren't super athletes. I like 30 seconds.
I did that for the first time in a TRX class. They did it with the 20 seconds on. And it was interesting.
It's great. I like it for serious athletes. For people that are not serious athletes, I like a 30-second interval and a longer recovery period. Mm. But that's a different...
horse of a different feather.
Yeah, yeah. What?
A horse of a different feather.
It's a bird of a different feather. Oh, my God. You're on something. Did they give you pain medication?
What's the horse thing? A horse of a different color. That's it. Not a different feather. Oh, Janice.
Okay. Hit training. Okay.
Oops.
Alternating short bursts of exercise at extremely challenging effort with periods of moderate recovery, okay, or recovery at a moderate energy level. So what this does is it boosts your endurance. It also helps dramatically with enhancing your performance because it allows you to work at a pace that your body has to adapt to, right? Systematic adaptation response. So you might not be able to run at 10 for 30 minutes, but if you practice running at 10 for intervals, your body is forced to adapt physically, cardiovascularly to running at that speed, and it dramatically enhances performance. Plus, it helps to prevent injury because you're not sustaining that level of intensity for a long duration of time. High intensity interval training. Love it, love it, love it. Do more of it. We talk about it all the time on the show. Great. More of it. More HIIT training. Okay. Compound exercise. Do you know what this one is, Janice? God, your IQ sucks today with this. All right. So a compound exercise is a movement that occurs at several joints, working multiple muscle groups. So this would be an example. Think of a squat where you come out of your squat and up onto your toes. So essentially, you're bending or you're putting your ankles, knees, and hips into flexion. And you target hamstrings, quads, and glutes. Called a compound exercise. Huh?
Okay.
Got it?
Yeah.
You don't have it, do you?
No, kinda.
You're putting multiple joints into flexion, and then it activates multiple muscle groups, which burns more calories.
But isn't that just like a regular deadlift or something? That's multiple.
But you're essentially practicing extension. You're coming up onto the toes.
Oh, okay, I got you.
It's also thinking about it. It's thinking about one of the factors of change I always talk about with regard to working out and progressing is extension or expansion. Always elongating, creating a longer lever, or pressing energy out, creating space in the joints, and you're activating other muscle groups.
Okay.
Hmm?
Yeah,
huh?
That makes sense.
Good. Glad you're following. Mm. Drop set. Come on, you know that.
God, no.
Do you really not?
This is why it's so interesting. I don't know this lingo.
You really don't?
Drop a set. So you drop your...
No, drop sets. So it's a technique that involves starting an exercise with the heaviest weight you can lift, which is called a one rep max, then drop setting. So you drop the weight or the load of the weight with each set. It's called a drop set.
Oh, I always go the other way.
Well, the other way is called a pyramid. You start low and go high.
Okay.
Yeah, but drop set is really more of a bodybuilding thing. You start with your one rep max and drop down. Pyramid is where you build up. You start low and go high.
I'm going to try that. Mm. But you see, that scares me because if I do lat pulls, which is a very vulnerable position, right? You're in a lat pull.
Well, like, you're not pulling behind the head.
No, I pull forward.
I always pull to the chest, right.
Yeah. But if you start, let's say, at 80, you know what I mean? Like, that's... I like to work. I think I have to work up to the weight.
No,
like
it's
my
actually
body has to be warm to work up to the weight.
But you should have warmed up first.
I'm fairly warm.
You
want
to put it through a range of motion. Okay, but you should have warmed up first. Although you can do, you know, a range of motion set, which is considered a dynamic stretch. But if you're already warm, and you've already got, you know,
you should be able to do
it. You should, and you should start with your one rep max. Then you drop set down. Although you can pyramid both. Both
techniques. No, but I need to try the other one.
And it's also smart to mix it up, truthfully. There's not one wrong or right way. The key is to try them both and see how they work. However, if you're trying to bulk, you really should drop and not pyramid. I believe. That's my experience.
Okay.
Because think about it. If you're why am I still talking? If you're pyramiding up, the goal with weight gain is to overload the muscle as much as you possibly can with good form. But if you fatigued the muscle by repping out with lesser weights, when you get to what would have been your one rep max, you're tired and won't be able to lift as heavy.
Exactly. No, that's true.
So a drop set, in truth, is actually more efficient, in particular if you're trying to gain, especially if you're trying to gain. No. So you can overload the muscle. Make sense?
Yeah, no, I'm going to try it.
Good that you're falling. Plyometrics. Surely you know this. Oh, come on. Yeah, you do.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, you do. Jump training. Quick explosive moves. Jumping. Plyo push-ups can count as well. Push-ups where you leave the ground, jumping squats, jumping lunges, bounding. But the key, let me be really clear, there's impact and there's plyometrics. So, for example, high knees or butt kicks or jumping jacks.
Oh, I hate the butt kicks. I hate that stuff.
They're actually not plyo. I sometimes say it because I don't want to get technical with people when I'm doing DVDs. I try to just kind of keep it as straightforward as possible. But that's impact, not true plyo. Plyometrics requires a recoil, like a spring. So if you're doing jump squats, you're jumping up, you're coming down. You're jumping up, you're coming down. You're never stopping and dropping.
Okay.
Superset.
Superset. Now that I've heard of.
A set of two exercises done back to back without rest in between. Now, this is a little bit confusing. You can do opposing muscle groups or same muscle groups. So, for example, you could do a superset of bicep curls into tricep kickbacks, or you can do a superset of, say, corkscrew bicep curls into preacher curls. So it could be two exercises that work the same muscle group, or it could be opposing muscle groups. Biceps into triceps. I think that I don't like opposing.
I know. That's I'm interested because I know you don't like that.
Personally, for me, I only use opposing for two reasons. One, if you want to bulk, I like opposing when you train, when you overload, though. Or if I'm training a beginner, okay, and I am thinking, okay, I need to rest that muscle group. So if I've just trained somebody who did a set of chest, I'm not going to hit their chest again because I don't think they can do the superset. I think that it will over fatigue. So I might say, if I have to train total body, by the way, and I only train total body in a class environment or a DVD, because if I was to personal train somebody, I would split the muscle groups. So it would be push and pull splits with lower body, which I've talked about before. But if for some reason in a class environment or a DVD, I need to provide a total body workout, I only use opposing muscle splits like chest and then back or biceps and then triceps when I'm dealing with the beginner. Because, not only, but more often, because it's allowing that other muscle group to rest. Whereas, if I'm training a more advanced athlete, I'll probably do a same muscle group superset to make sure that they're really getting that fatigue and that work in. Right. Okay? Huh?
Yep.
Last thing. Target heart rate. All right. So we talk about this all the time, but what does it actually mean? Target heart rate means the beats per minute that you should aim for during your cardio exercise. Now, here's my problem. A lot of people say that, oh, if you do low-intensity exercise, you want to shoot for 50 to 60% to be at your fat target fat-burning zone. But we've talked about this before. The reality is that when your body is required to be less efficient, it's going to use more fat calories for fuel. This is a percentage ratio. However, when you're working out harder, even though you might use more glycogen and phosphate, sugar, etc., you're still going to need fat reserves, and you burn more calories overall and subsequently more fat calories in the long run. So if you didn't understand anything I just said, work out harder, period. I like for people who are not beginners to shoot for 80 to 85%. Hmm? Huh? Make sense?
How long can you stay in the gym now and seriously work out? Focused.
God, no, I do 30 minutes and I got to go.
It's 30. Yeah. No, I'm close to that too.
My life, I just can't. But it's the way that I train. So when I go in there and I mean business, I can kill 30 minutes and make it count. Like it's an hour of like, oh.
How much cardio would you do then in a 30 minute?
My whole workout is cardiovascular because of the way that I train.
Gotcha.
So even though I'm doing strength exercises, the way that I sequence my exercises is all cardiovascular. So, and I work high intensity intervals into my training. So the way that I work out, I don't waste a second of time. I'm even so efficient with my training that the move to move, the way that I emerge from one exercise to the next is an exercise. So for example, let's say I'm doing a crescent pose, right? And I'm doing bicep curls. My next move might be a stork pose or a warrior three, same thing. Mm-hmm. Going into kickbacks. So even the way that I merge from exercise to exercise, I make an exercise, a form of fitness. Or like if I'm on the ground, I'm always thinking about utilizing my body position to keep my exercise fluid and three-dimensional and functional. So if I'm standing up and I want to get to the ground, the way that I get to the ground will be an exercise. If I did something like lunges with a chop, I might find the ground with something called a push-away balance. So it's a single leg squat into a pike push-up. Then I'll end that move if I want to hit the ground. Then I might jump into my plank. And if I'm doing table or mat or chest, I'm automatically on the ground. Then I rotate and I move into my next exercise.
Really?
Yeah, no, I'm that good.
So you don't, no, but that's part of the thing that slows people down in gyms is, you know, there's a game on, you start, you know, you do a set and you kind of start looking at the game.
No, fitness for me is business. It's business. I get the job done. I don't want to be there forever. So I want to spend 30 minutes making my ass smaller. How can I make my 30 minutes, make my ass as small as possible and my body as functional as possible?
You don't talk to anybody
no,
in the gym?
No, I hate talking to people, period, let alone in the gym. I'm a Scrooge. No, that's not true. I just hate talking to you. But what I do is
you put headphones on.
Yeah, no, I don't like to talk in the gym. It annoys me. So I put my headphones on and I get my job done. I leave. Occasionally, when I'd rather be dead, then yeah, I'll get on the Stairmaster and just plug away. Or the treadmill and just plug away. But if I'm in there to do my job in the most efficient way possible, I train in the most efficient way possible.
Well, that inspires.
I get pretty serious about my
No, but that inspires me because sometimes that's why, you know, you think, oh, an hour and a half. And like, just, I
no, just 30 minutes. But I, like I said, I do it and I never stop.
Waste a second.
Yeah, I don't waste a second. I think of every movement that I put my body through as being an exercise. So I don't just stop and drop. I make even the drop part of my fitness routine, the way that I drop my body and the transitions of my exercises and then where I build in my supersets and then how I build in an active recovery with core-based training. I'm serious about it.
Wow.
Yeah. That's all. I'm done. And don't say you're excited. Just tell me what the next segment is. God damn.
No, we should. Well, we'll take some calls. We'll take some
Fine.
Calls.
Fine. Good.
We are back, and Cindy is waiting to talk to you.
Aha! Hey, Cindy, what's going on?
Hey, Jillian, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. My question for you was, I have had a bit of a rough year, considering that I lost my dog, and then I lost my mom in January.
Oh, my God.
And then my cousin in February.
Oh, my God, honey.
Yeah, so like I said, rough year.
Yeah.
And so now I'm trying to deal with the grief. And I'm still working out, but I just can't. I'm not losing any weight. I've actually put weight back on.
Okay.
And I don't want to go back to where I was. Because about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I lost 95 pounds, and I don't want to go back.
Okay. Okay, so hold on. I'm sorry. I'm reeling from what you just said to me. So is the question, despite everything you've been through, how do you not put weight back on, or is it something else?
It's just how to deal with all of that, because I know it's...
Yeah. Okay. Jeez. All right. I'm not going to kid you. I'm not going to blow some smoke up your rear here. You have had a year that would wipe out most people. And with that said, I don't think you can negate any of that. You know what I mean? There's no like... Well, you know, you move on and life goes on. And I'm no grief expert, but I would shoot someone if they said that to me right now. I think you need to go through what you need to go through. I think you need to grieve. I think you need to feel as bad as you need to feel. I think you need to process everything you need to process before you even think about moving forward. In the interim, managing the grief so that it's not destructive, that's a different conversation. So,
right. I think that's where what I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, being able to deal with these feelings in a place other than the bottom of a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket. You know what I'm saying? That's
right.
Important. So the real question you have to ask is, where can you find joy right now? Where can you find relief? Where can you find support? And when I say joy, it could be anything from I enjoy a hobby. It could be, for me, I love horseback riding. So even though I might be devastated about something, if I can get on my horse and get out, it momentarily puts me in a good place. Is there an environment that makes you feel happy? Is there an activity that makes you feel happy? Is there something, an indulgence other than food, that's affirming that you love and can afford? Like a massage, even getting a foot massage. It's not that expensive, but just the act of like doing something nice for yourself, focusing on your hygiene is really going to help your upkeep. So the workouts, getting your hair done, getting your nails done, where you can feel beautiful and you can still feel alive and you can focus on caretaking, things like that, a friend that offers support, a support group, joining a support group, joining a book club, joining, and I say book club, my friends are all in book clubs. I don't know where they find the time, but they love it. They all read that pervert book, 50 Shades of Grey, which is probably why they're doing it. But with that said, like, you know, they love it. They get together and they get drunk and they read this book. And you tell that I'm friends with, like, all heteros. With that said, they all love that book. That's fine. Heidi and I are like, we're going to skip the 50 Shades of Grey book club, but we'll see you guys for dinner on Friday night. Anyway, my point is, you know, whatever you can do to find a safe place that provides you with these moments of reprieve and happiness instead of turning to food as your friend, as something you control, as comfort. Make a list of all those things.
Okay.
And then, you know, my mom said something to me, although I hadn't gone through an ounce of what you'd gone through. I lost a dog in 2008, but this was not, dogs to me are members of the family. Like a dog.
Oh, I get you there.
Oh, I remember my brother was at the house and I was like, I would be less upset if it was you for any, I mean, I was kidding with him, but my point is like, I mean, dogs to me, like if you're an animal person, you're an animal person. And,
yeah.
And animals are members of your family, especially dogs. Dogs, it's like, they have no judgment of you. They, no matter how ugly you, yep. No matter how crappy you look, no matter what mood you're in, no matter what failure you've had, no matter what embarrassing moment, they love you anyway, and they need nothing from you except food and love back. It's like they don't require anything else. Dogs are, it's heavy, heavy when you lose a dog, and you lost your mom, your dog, and your cousin. There's no, oh my God, thank God. The only, anyway, so. I lost this dog in 2008, and my mom, I was so wrecked, dude. I mean, wrecked. Like, wrecked. On the floor in a ball, hysterical. I'd had the dog since I was 20. It was the worst. And my mom said to me, you know, sweetheart, because then I got into one of my moods, like I get into, and I was like, what is aging going to be about? Watching people die as I get older. I'll lose you and I'll lose my friends and I get my, and I'll age. And my mom was like, sweetheart, you know, life is about making new connections. And now might not be the time. You can't push anything before you're ready, but we have to make new connections. And it's, you know, down the road, maybe, you know, what I did when I lost Baxter was I decided I couldn't allow him to die for nothing. So I started rescuing dogs. And I was like, I'm going to make sure his death stands for something. I'm going to rescue dogs. And I would pull, you know, 5 dogs out of the pound a year and rehabilitate them and find them homes. And that's how I ended up with all the friggin' dogs that I have. But nevertheless, I brought a meaning to each loss. So, you know, think about Janice and I talk about her mom when she lost her mom. And it's like, and she had such a hard, she is having and had such a hard time moving on. And we've talked about how she should honor her mom by living her life to the fullest, by taking care of herself and, you know, in celebrating every single day in honor of her mom. So I want you to think about what meaning you could bring to each one of these losses. And by bringing a meaning, it helps us endure the grief. There's a book by a Holocaust survivor named Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning. And he talks about how he survived the Holocaust. He lost his entire family. He lost his wife and he brought a meaning to it and it helped him survive it. Just like John Walsh, who lost his son, Adam Walsh, and he started America's Most Wanted. He brought a meaning to the loss. So bring a meaning to your loss and then, you know, find affirming ways to manage your grief that aren't destructive. And last but not least, when the time is right, and you'll know when the time is right, you start gradually making new connections whether it's a new pet, a new friend, in my case, two new kids.
I'm not doing any more kids.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see. I think I'm done with two. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, what a goldfish. I don't care. Whatever it is that brings meaning into your life, you know, new relationships, new connections. And that's how we continue to grow and how we continue to evolve and find that meaning and that reason for life. So again, I'm no genius in these areas, but that's the sage advice I've been given, and I've found that it's gotten me through many a tough time. And I'm so sorry, buddy. I wish there was something else I could say to make it better for you.
Thank you so much.
My
and
pleasure.
I appreciate everything that you do and for bringing a smile to my face. You and Janice are great.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart. And thank you so much for calling us.
All right, thanks. Take care.
You
bye
too.
Cindy, take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
What?
Must say goodbye. Now we've done a segment. We've had another little segment, and now we've talked to some people, and now it's time to go.
You're wheezing again. See how nervous you get about this? You wheeze. You have a hard time with this.
I'm fine.
You're not. You look like you might cry.
Maybe I will one day. And then that'll really throw you off.
No.
You would be, you know, if I started just weeping right now, like breakdown weeping, you wouldn't know what to do.
Of course I would. People do that in front of me all the time.
Yeah, but
I just wouldn't be sympathetic because it's you. But I would be fine with it.
That's right. I forgot people weep in front of you.
Yeah, no. I have no problem with vulnerability and emotion. Yeah. Like I said, I just wouldn't be sympathetic.
Maybe you should start to cry, and maybe why don't you cry? Since you want to show how emotionally attached you are, why don't you weep right now?
No, I have a healthy attachment to the audience. I don't deny my attachment by trying to run out the door at the end of every episode.
I want to see you cry.
I'm not sad right now.
I'll make you sad.
You do every day, but not enough to cry.
Okay, then next week. Next week I'll
make
you
cry.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Make it seem like it's been ages. Tomorrow, sun, new buildings, scrape the sky. I love this country dearly. I can feel the light of clearly. But I never thought I'd be alone to try. Once I was outside the station, selling red and white carnations. We were still alone, my wife and I. Before we married, saved my money. Now I want to bring my family stateside. Put off the boat, they stayed a while, then scattered across the coast. Once a year I'll see them for a week or so at most. I should go on.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.